You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we looked into the eye of the missile launch and what we saw was beautiful. And before out there you think I'm like pro-war or pro-violence or some shit, that is a reference to Brian Williams taking heat for calling the attack on Syria beautiful, and also a reference to John Locke in season one of Lost. So if you followed that, good for you. If not, that explanation is for everyone else except me. If you enjoy your trip here in the Midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you could leave us a 5-star review on on iTunes, or you can tip us on patreon.com/themidside. You will only be charged based upon any content we release, and we are doing Patreon-only, Patreon-exclusive content. Before we get started this week, I want to give a little bit of a warning, and this warning and this piece of advice comes from an interaction I had with Midsider Alfred. Midsider Alfred is one of our most engaged listeners, and I love him for it. It's awesome. He gives us feedback. He helps shape the show. It's great. But he has started to go down the rabbit hole. And what I mean is, he will message me about pop punk and Bayside and talk to me about that. And recently he messaged me about hipsterism and trying to learn about that, because apparently he's very, very lucky and doesn't really interact with hipsters. I probably just have been fortunate because I live in the LA area.
Does he live on the moon?
Apparently. So good for him. Maybe we should all go to the moon. But we started talking about hipsters and I was explaining it to him. And I sent him a couple MC Lars song, Hipster Girl and Hipster Mom. And from the song, he really latched onto the question, is breast milk vegan? To which then he started Googling and sending me articles about if breast milk is vegan or not. Now, admittedly, this is a hilarious consideration, and when MC Lars put that in his song, it was very funny. And then we started talking about the age-old question of, can vegan girls give head? Because that seems to be consuming meat of an animal. And we started discussing consent, and we learned a lot about veganism. But what I want to tell you is the same thing I told Alfred, Midsider Alfred. Please, please do not go down the rabbit hole. I have wasted 34 years of my life going down the rabbit hole, and that's how I can bring this show to you. I am an expert at witnessing the farce. I witness the farce and I go down the rabbit hole so you don't have to. So while I appreciate it and I love the engagement, take a step back. And let me witness the farce. No, when you get too close to witnessing the farce, take a step back and remember that you want to remain a healthy and productive member of society and not become me. So let's get to it. Let's go down the rabbit hole. Joining me this trip, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. And Daniel, I have something I really want to talk to you about this week, because you're in D.C. and a lot has happened this week. You know, we had Gorsuch was approved. We had the attack on Syria. And you're telling me all about this thing called the nuclear option? What are these related? Like, what does the nuclear option mean? I'm kind of worried.
First of all, I would like to note that I also have a cold. So that's fun. And then two, so, going down the rabbit hole is definitely not vegan. Just want to point out. Does not approve vegans. Okay. No, we're not nuking Syria. There's nothing to do with that. And heaven forbid that any of us should talk foreign policy on this show, because what the fuck do we know about foreign policy things? So let's not talk too much about that. But the Gorsuch thing, yeah, I live in D.C. and I work nominally in the realm of lawyers. And thus, I hear a lot about this. Basically, the short answer is Senate has a rule that said that Supreme Court justices required 60 votes. Now they require 60 votes, but basically you could filibuster them if they didn't get 60 votes. And because the Democrats were threatening to filibuster Neil Gorsuch, Trump's first Supreme Court nominee to replace Antonin Scalia, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell changed the Senate rules so that a simple majority was needed to get a Supreme Court justice approved. This is the first time in history, and thus it made the news all over. And Gorsuch was approved this week. We have a new Supreme Court justice. He'll be sworn in on Monday, which is, if you're listening to this today, I don't do
yes, today.
Things well.
It's Mid-Side Mondays. Come on, alliteration. It's all alliterative.
Mid-Side Mondays.
How did it used to be?
How did what? Who?
How did judges get confirmed before if it wasn't a majority?
You needed a super
majority.
Well,
they got confirmed, and it. So let me be really clear. It wasn't that you absolutely had to have 60 votes. Justices have been confirmed with just a simple majority. But if you didn't have 60 votes, a senator could filibuster the nomination. It just had never happened until now. And so when the Democrats threatened to do that, Chuck Schumer specifically, Mitch McConnell said, yeah, well, fuck you, I'm pressing the nuke button. And it's called the nuclear option basically because it's the sort of weapon of last resort, which is we're just going to change the rules so that we can do what we want with a majority. And it worked beautifully.
Why does that matter? Why is this a thing? Why are we talking about it? Because it's like, okay, I mean, why didn't they just use the nuclear option to begin with and just say, okay, we have way more important things to do than piddle about this judge. Like, we already know we want him. We're in the majority. This is what we can do. And we did it. Why wasn't that a thing?
So the nonsense answer is that it's purely historic. It's just never happened before. So that's why we have to talk about it to some degree. But the sort of more, I don't even know if this is nuanced. There was some pretense to Supreme Court justices that their nomination and their existence was not political. And thus, Supreme Court justices were often approved with some bipartisan support. Even justices Kagan and Sotomayor, that wise Latina woman, were both approved with some Republican support. It's not like Republicans, even though they disliked her ideas, said she's not qualified to be a judge. In this case, because the Republicans refused to vote on Obama's last nominee, Merrick Garland, the Democrats this time had to take revenge and decide they were going to filibuster someone who was eminently not qualified to be on the court, Neil Gorsuch. And thus we find ourselves in this predicament where for the first time ever, we can have a simple majority to approve Supreme Court justices without fear of filibuster. Isn't that exciting? Doesn't that just get your blood pumping? That inside baseball nonsense politics.
I think it's important to know because it's a further example of how partisan every discussion has become in this country. And I think we'll see that a lot on this episode with a lot of the things we talk about.
And really, just quickly here, like the fucking bad thing about all this is, of course, the reaction to it. And the idea that, like, I've seen some tweets from lefty journalist types, whatever, that it's like, Mitch McConnell single-handedly destroys democracy by changing Senate rules. It's like, if you think the safeguard of liberty are Senate rules, you are going to be sorely put in a gulag at some point, because that's not how any of this works.
I like the use of sorely there. It's a good double entendre.
Indeed. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sorely Sotomayor.
You know, the other thing is, of course, hashtag stolen Supreme Court seat. One journalist suggested that they never refer to Gorsuch as a Supreme Court justice, but instead as like the illegitimate justice, Neil Gorsuch, things like that.
That's the best wrestling gimmick ever.
Illegitimate justice. So we'll see how the left keeps their shit together through all of this. If the illegitimate justice and the illegitimate president just make them lose their fucking minds.
All right. Also joining us this trip from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, do you have anything quickly to add about any of this, or just want to head into the news?
Quickly to add about anything?
I love how he's making me. You just Dr. Drew'd me really bad. Is what you just did. You're making me explain that I was trying to show with my voice about rushing through this part. So thank
the
you. Now we're belaboring this.
In Spain, falls mainly on the plane.
And yes. Yes, and. James.
What?
Do you have an answer to the question?
No.
No, okay then.
No, yes, and.
Yes, and let's move on.
James, you're a clown, so let's talk about some clowns. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fact.
You know it's going to be a particularly good week when we can start off the absurdity of the news by talking about how real-life clowns are super pissed off that It is being remade. This comes from an AV Club article, which actually just links to another article. But the idea is basically that the It trailer that we reviewed last week and that premiered on the movie's going to premiere on September 8th, it scored a record 197 million views in 24 hours, confirming that, quote, everyone was excited to see the original terrifying clown return to the big screen. Well, almost everyone. The article in Mel Magazine, not us, certainly, talks to, does that mean we're clowns? Transitive property of math, James?
the transitive property of equality says we are clowns.
That's right. Talks to the one group decidedly not stoked to see an evil clown once again crawl out of the sewer to terrorize New England kids. Actual clowns. Now, while your response to this news might be good, fuck clowns.
Gotta love AV Club. I love that part.
Reading the actual piece is sort of heartbreaking in that the clowns interviewed know how little clowns are like these days and seem genuinely crestfallen on the future of clowning. This is a quote from the article. It's a dying profession, and the people who do it and scrape together a living have to grapple with the fact that it's cool and hip to not like clowns. Justin, should we feel bad for these red-nosed idiots, or should we not care about clowns and their feelings?
Good, fuck clowns. No, I would never take the same stance as the AV Club. I mean, there is a certain level of sympathy to have for people who believe in something or believe in a profession that's dying. But the question I have is, isn't clowning archaic? Like, don't you need to update with the times? Like, what kind of kid is going to get excited nowadays for a clown to show up to his birthday party or to go to the circus and see clowns when you can just turn on YouTube and see things that are much funnier than ever before? Clowns are sort of the modern incarnation of the court gesture. The court jester. And isn't the court jester an archaic thing? So maybe clowns have just come and gone.
I think clowns' time has passed a little bit. There still may be some niche market for, like, incredibly great clowns, but the point I'll push back a little bit with you is that, if we don't have clowns, are we going to get people like Penn Jillette, for instance, who started his professional career as a clown, or Eric Stone Street, who started his professional career as a clown? Where will we get our tall, usually overweight comedians, if not for the clowning community?
So because they're not traditionally good-looking enough, they have to start under face paint in order to get noticed? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. They have to put on clown face and dance for us.
I mean, it's the same thing as anything else. There'll just be new ways of discovering talents. I mean, how much... we got Justin Bieber from YouTube. There will just be new ways of discovering talent. I mean,
yeah, you're not, you have to making always... a good argument.
You always have to believe the cream will rise to the top.
The scary clown top. Indeed.
The scary clown cream.
I mean, let's look at this from a lefty perspective, though. This is a profession. These are people's jobs. We need to protect their jobs. Therefore, we need to put limits on how badly you can shit talk clowns or on new innovative jobs that are making clowns obsolete, etc., because otherwise, where will these people work, right?
Is there a clown union?
I'm sure there is a clown union.
They have clown colleges.
They do, indeed. I'm sure it's a branch of the SEIU or whatever the fuck they are.
Yeah, no, in fact, I mean, we're going to have an
Sacha
article.
Sacha Baron Cohen went to a clown college in France, which one of my friends is attending right now.
Huh, so your friend is a clown?
He wants to go into comedy, which was the other thing I was going to pivot to. Why don't these clowns just become stand-up comics?
Well, because right, why clown? Why is the face paint and the garish expression and, like, I don't, just the whole getup, why is that critical to the process? I don't get it. That's something I never understood, even as a child. Like, yeah, it's just, why? It's just, it seems like just fully a tradition. It's just like, we're doing this because we always have, like, and it just doesn't mean anything to me. It's just, there, clown, all right. I'm not one of these people who's afraid of clowns, never was. I just don't get it. Why?
Vladimir Daniel, Putin is asking himself that question, by the way.
Transition, okay.
As it is now illegal in Russia to share an image of Putin as a gay clown. were we really just, hard up for stories this week? Leading with clown, going right into... Justin just searched other clown stories on Google to find the news.
No, this is what I'm talking about the rabbit hole. Like, the internet just gave this week. Do not go down the rabbit hole, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy. Russia has banned a picture depicting Vladimir Putin as potentially a gay clown.
As a potentially gay clown.
Whatever. I'm dyslexic. Russian news outlets are having trouble reporting exactly which image of the internet's many Putin gay clown memes is now illegal to share because, you know, it's been banned. But the picture was described last week on the Russian government's list of things that constitute, quote, extremism. Item 4071, a picture of a Putin-like person, quote, with eyes and lips made up. The supposed non-standard sexual orientation of the president of the Russian Federation, which says at the top of his head, stop homophobia. Kind of a mixed message if you look at the image, which is Putin with eyeshadow, lipstick, yellowish hair with a rainbow background to stop homophobia. Are you saying that Putin is homophobic, or are you saying that he is gay and we should stop being homophobic toward him? Very bad visual rhetoric. I do not approve of this. Justin, what are your thoughts about gay Putin clown?
My favorite thing about this story is nobody can figure out exactly which image is banned, because there are so many variations on it that they just keep arguing over which is banned. It's absolutely hilarious. But I mean, on a more
cultural
standpoint, This is one of those things where I look at it and I go, can people really continue to complain about America and say America's awful when shit like this happens? Look at Daniel. All of the memes that are out there. The big meme after the election was Tiny Trump, where because of his tiny hands, they started photoshopping Trump being a lot smaller in pictures to essentially make him look like the boss baby. Really? Imagine if they tried to ban that in America. No more Tiny Trump memes or a specific Tiny Trump meme. If he only took offense to, like, the Tiny Trump with Obama meme and that was the only one you couldn't do. We would never let that happen in America because we have a thing called the Constitution and the First Amendment. And I just fail to see how people can't look at stories like this and go, well, yeah, they're pretty fucked up, so we got it pretty good over here. Just something as small as this and insignificant, that's what it does to my brain. Does anyone else, like, have that kind of experience when they see a story like this? Like, glad we don't waste our time with this shit in America.
I agree that there is, that, you know, we still have to be optimistic about what we have and appreciative of what we have here. But, you know, in America, there are signs of this same kind of repression setting itself up. So, you know, for example, I think it's very notable that they are banning these memes under the banner of stopping extremism, which is something that which is a rhetorical device, an anti-concept we're already using to silence or denigrate, not necessarily silence yet, but to denigrate particular points of view.
Isn't there a difference, though? And either of you can answer this question. Isn't there a difference between the cultural way it's approached and the law? I agree with everything you just said, James, culturally. you know, when you talk about the alt-right and the use of memes, Gamergate and the use of memes, the left and the use of memes, as I just said with the tiny Trump thing. But that's why the First Amendment was put into the Constitution, was it not? So even though people are getting all offended and pissy and becoming pussies, and what do they call them, snowflakes? That's why the First Amendment exists. Do we really believe the First Amendment could ever be repealed?
Yes. I mean, I do. Look,
just made me cry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a dangerous thought, but it's. I mean, look at other countries. Canada just implemented a law where you can't speak bad of Muslims. Europe has had free speech laws go the wayside all the time, and their constitutions or whatever are supposedly based on ours. We have a longer tradition of free speech. That doesn't mean anything. Like, it's something like if you asked, I think it's what the millennial generation right now, or maybe the college generation right now, if they thought that limits on free speech were a good thing, like 41% say yes. 41% say yes, free speech should be limited.
Yeah.
That's like 41% of the population I could never fuck. Like, that's like a correct baseline value if you don't believe in free speech.
For some reason, I don't think you have to worry about it. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that when you look at a cultural cross section, not to make the show not about your sex life, Justin, but not to pull the show away from that topic, but a cultural cross section like that, that's scary. That is and will we ever see the First Amendment explicitly repealed? I don't know about that. Probably not. But we will see it essentially destroyed by piecemeal.
Yeah, with what Daniel was just saying, I think you guys have both raised excellent points that terrify me. They absolutely, absolutely terrify me. And I think actually the fact that we're even having this discussion on the show lends a lot of credence to both of your arguments. So I am now sufficiently depressed.
You should be sufficiently depressed and terrified. You in particular, Justin, because you seem to hold all views that everyone else on the planet hates.
No, we've been over this on the show before. Can you imagine if I speak out in favor of Zack Snyder, in favor of the Patriots, that I will just like, I'm going to go to jail constantly.
Zack Snyder, Patriots, and Ayn Rand. That fucking Venn diagram right in the middle there. You're first of the gulags.
So. Punk was supposed to have rape culture in it at one point last year. We needed to start tearing down these bands and the labels because of rape culture somehow in the scene. I am fucked, dude.
Oh, totally. Totally raped. Ugh. So, speaking of free speech and...
Podcast canceled.
Not yet. We still have time to fight, gentlemen.
Raise your swords. The internet has tried to cancel us before and failed.
That's right. We outlasted Grantland and what's the fuck that other one we outlasted? Whatever.
Gawker.
That's right. We outlasted him.
Hulk Hogan's on our side. He says racial slurs when he's having sex. I mean, I don't do that.
One hopes not. Speaking of, I have no idea, insanity.
Race, speaking of race.
Speaking of race and...
Speaking of clown college.
Thank you, James.
There we go. Race at a clown college.
Stanford University has admitted a Muslim teen who wrote in his application essay 100 times, hashtag Black Lives Matter. Ziad Ahmed, a senior at the Princeton Day School in Princeton, New Jersey.
I'm not even laughing at his name. I'm laughing at Justin laughing at the name.
Well, you can't
sorry
write better satire. Like, say his name again. Say it again, please.
Ziad Ahmed.
Come on. He couldn't have been named better. Like he couldn't be named Steve or some shit. He has to be Ziad Ahmed.
That's right. Said he was surprised.
It's Steve Ahmed.
Prestigious Palo Alto University let him in. Quote, I didn't think I would get admitted to Stanford at all, but it's quite refreshing to see that they viewed my unapologetic activism as an asset rather than a liability, he told Mike. The essay prompt was, quote, what matters to you and why? Justin? What the fuck?
So I did a little bit more research on this because I was curious how somebody whose entire application essay was just hashtag Black Lives Matter 100 times could be admitted. I went to the Stanford page And I saw everything they had to do. This is a section of it, Stanford short essays. So it says, candidates respond to all three essay topics. There's a 100-word minimum and a 250-word maximum for each essay. So these are the three essay topics. Stanford students possess an intellectual vitality. Reflect on an idea or experience that has been important to your intellectual development. Virtually all of Stanford's undergraduates live on campus. Write a note to your future roommate that reveals something about you or that will help your roommate and us know you better. And then the final one is the one you mentioned, Daniel. What matters to you and why? Now, all of these have 150-word minimum and 250-word maximum. So first of all,
they're basically 100-word minimum.
100-word minimum, correct. So first of all, each of these essays are essentially write an online dating profile and submit it to Stanford University. Okay. And the second thing is he had 100 words and literally all of them are hashtag Black Lives Matter. First of all, that's not a word. And second of all, it's not an essay. Is this postmodernism? Is that why they let this person in?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why they let this person in. It's certainly, it's a dual-edged sword for me.
I can answer that question from the research I did.
I don't know.
This guy at 18 has already been widely recognized by politicians, including, who's this asshole? I forgot his name.
Martin O'Malley.
Martin O'Malley and Barack Obama. He's given a TED Talk. He is a kind of poster child commissar for the new left right now. Like, he is fairly well known. That's the real reason he was let in.
So why was he surprised he got into Stanford? Or is this like,
because he's being a little bitch
first in the draft and saying, oh, I'm so surprised I was picked first in the draft, in the NFL draft.
Like that only remove all the respectability of a football player. Yes.
It's pretty bad. We're talking about people who get in trouble for a lot of domestic abuse and drug policy violations, and they're more respectable than this guy.
Absolutely.
This whole thing is a dual-edged sword for me, and not for the reason you might think. Obviously, his ideas are shit. But I do like cheating the system. I'm big on taking advantage of nonsense things. So, Stanford is already a nonsense school for the most part, and I'm sure he wasn't applying to the fucking physics department or whatever, because not quite going to get in. But when I...
Hashtag dark matter matters.
Hashtag dark matters. Yeah, that's cute.
That's awesome.
I like it. That's a new t-shirt. Goes right up there with Schrodinger's blowjob. Dark matter blowjob. Matters. But... What was I saying? Oh, when I was going to college, I was a bit of a pretentious dick, as most high school kids are, and I applied to one school, assumed I was getting into that school, and assumed I would be getting the full ride scholarship, because that's how my brain worked, because I was awesome and everyone else was terrible. Turns out, by the way, I did get in and get a full ride scholarship, but that's beside the point. The essay question to get in was, what question would you ask future students applying to Millikan University? Which is the school I went to. So one, I was like, all they're doing is getting free work out of us, really. The first draft I wrote was the question, what question would you ask incoming students of Millikan University? But then I decided that was too obvious. So I decided to fuck with them. And so the question I wrote on my entrance to the only school I applied to was, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? And I wrote a 2-page, completely bullshit answer to the question. I actually called a zoologist, by the way, from the San Diego Zoo to discuss woodchucking. And they fucking ate it up. They were like, this is brilliant. Like, how did you come up? Oh, let us suck your dick now. And I was just – that was the moment I realized college is bullshit and I don't care.
Oh my God, if only that had happened to me earlier.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's like, oh, that's my like a God. Viral clickbait article nowadays.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So that was,
I actually have a similar experience. Yeah. It's not anywhere near as extreme, but I had like a poetry seminar my junior year because I had a fiction writing degree. and we had to do different types of poems every week. And one week it was a performance poem, and my performance was showing up, putting my stack of poems down on the table, and leaving and not attending class. Because I didn't want to go to class.
Bravo. Bravo. Brilliant.
Oh, my God.
Daring. Forward.
I got an A in the class.
Of course you did.
Oh,
so that's why
God.
I kind of have some reverence for this kid, where he's like, you know what? I'm getting into other schools. I don't really fucking care if I get into Stanford. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Suck my dick. And he got in. And so I kind of have some respect for him, even though his ideas are crap and he's going to grow up to be a horrible human being. Speaking of...
Have you read his Twitter profile, though?
What, James?
Did you read the man's Twitter profile?
No, I try not to engage with idiots.
And Twitter.
Okay, no, I mean, I'm not saying engage, I mean just read what's on it, and read the tweet that he sent out about this. I don't think he was gaming the system at all. He just literally thought, like, oh, like, just chanting the hashtag, doing a, you know, prose chat, you know, prose chant, basically, of... Black Lives Matter over and over again. That was serious. Like, I don't think there's any kind of like goofiness or trying to game the system. This is just literally what he felt like doing. And he thought this was acceptable. I think from everything I've read on his Twitter,
I probably agree with you. I don't know the kid. I didn't read it. I probably agree with you. There is some half of me that thinks that people this young are either indoctrinated like this kid, or, to use the Adam Carolla theorem, trying to get some pussy. And it's unclear to me which side this kid lands in, but I don't know. If you are totally...
Okay, again, look at his Twitter. Look at the sweater he's wearing in his picture. It's not number two.
Maybe he's gay. But, okay, maybe he is totally indoctrinated. I don't know. It makes me feel
worse
about
humanity. To your point,
though,
Daniel... To your point for number two, we are in the age of virtue signaling, and a lot of young people, especially young men, believe you have to virtue signal in order to get laid. So that really supports your argument.
I bet this kid would vote for Trump. Yeah, just kidding. Speaking of people who aren't voting for Trump, Kendall Jenner and everyone at Pepsi.
I don't agree with
that. Oh, my God.
Oh, interesting. If you, I don't know, you must live in some cave in Afghanistan if you don't know the controversy over the Pepsi ad this week with Kendall Jenner in it, but just in case you're crawling out of some hole, some rabbit hole, let me revisit this. So this week, a new Pepsi ad premiered online featuring reality TV star Kendall Jenner. The ad was pulled Wednesday after being met with widespread condemnation. Critics accused Pepsi of being insensitive about a nationwide protest movement following police shootings of African Americans. If you haven't seen the ad, one, you should watch it. It's still widely available on the internet. It's basically Kendall Jenner doing some Kendall Jenner shit, and then she sees a protest outside. She takes off her wig and whatever the fuck she's wearing, goes out to join the protest, brings a Pepsi up to a police officer, and then all racism disappears. Just vanishes. Just gone. So clearly, no one should be upset about that. But Pepsi apologized, saying that they were just trying to project a global message of unity, peace, and understanding. Clearly, we missed the mark, and we apologize. We did not intend to make light of any serious issue. We are removing the content and halting any further rollout. We also apologize for putting Kendall Jenner in this position. She's been in every other position, but not this one, apparently. Justin, were you offended by the ad?
I wasn't offended by this ad at all. I wasn't offended by anything about this. Of course, I watched this, and I was completely dumbfounded that people actually found anything offensive in this. And there's a couple things about this story. The first is, there's no such thing as pulling an advertisement anymore. Like, Pepsi acknowledged right. that people were offended, and they issued an apology and said they pulled the ad from television. It's still on YouTube. In fact, it's still under the Kardashian YouTube channel. That's how I ended up watching it. I searched it, and it was the first time I've only been to the Kardashian YouTube channel, and it's got, like, over 4 million views, or did at the time when I saw it. So the ad's still out there. Pepsi's still getting their money's worth for this ad. And then as far as advertising goes, this is no different than any other sort of advertisement that Coca-Cola's ever run. The worst thing about this ad, the most offensive thing about this ad, is Pepsi was just trying to ape Coke's advertising strategy. And it's the advertising strategy of Coke Life. And they just show everyday life things or everyday cultural things that have Coke associated with it and how Coke makes it better and Coke makes you smile. We saw this in the Mad Men finale where they use the famous Coke ad where, you know, give everyone a Coke to become part of Don Draper's journey and to show how Don Draper came up with that ad. This ad that Pepsi did is just a poor modern version of that iconic Coke ad. All they're trying to do is say, this is what this generation is doing. This is what the culture is right now. Oh, we're going to use one of their cultural icons and include Pepsi in it. That's all it is. It's the Coke strategy. So if you're really offended by this ad and what they did with it, you're offended by your own culture. Maybe you should take a good hard look in the fucking mirror and figure out how you contributed to them making this. That's all this is. This is more a reflection of you fuckers out there than it is any poor advertising.
Yeah, that's exactly how I took it. I was offended just because it normalizes what those protesters are doing, which is destroying cognition, indirectly, of course. For me, this is the equivalent of an ad featuring someone just stumbling out of a brothel, taking a shot of cocaine, and then just cracking open a refreshing Pepsi to wash it down.
James, you've actually made a really, really good point that I hadn't thought of about this whole normalization thing. They're normalizing the idea that the people that Kendall Jenner side on are these peaceful protesters. As someone who went to a Milo event, and as someone who had friends who were attacked at the Berkeley Milo event, and we've talked about this before on the show, these people on Kendall Jenner's side aren't there, like, handing Pepsis to the police officers and saying, oh, it's okay, it's okay. They're there trying to incite riots and trying to incite violence. They're there essentially trolling and acting violent and saying hateful things to try and get people to attack them. Or, as we saw with, you know, Midsider Katrina, who was attacked in Berkeley, they're there actually attacking people, wearing masks and hiding their identities to attack people. So it actually is offensive on a level if you sit down and think about it. It's offensive that, as you're saying, normalizing these people as peaceful and benevolent. Because they're not the peaceful and benevolent ones, and the ad portrays it as if you need to extend the Pepsi and the help and the hope and the happiness to the cop. That's actually the offensive part. I wasn't offended. Now I'm kind of offended. Thanks, James.
You're welcome.
Both make such excellent points. I'm going to make a completely different point that I hope has some interest to the audience, which is Pepsi doesn't give a shit about you or your fucking protests. Coke doesn't give a shit about your life. Subaru couldn't give two shits about your children. And Marvel certainly doesn't give one dick about your trans movement. These are all companies who are trying to make money. Pepsi made an ad that they thought was going to be relevant to modern culture because that's what the fuck they do to make more money. These companies, especially the companies at this scale, are basically giant money printing machines. That's all they care about. That's all they're interested in. And in fact, one might say that that's all they should be interested in, is maximizing shareholder value, period. That's all these companies are trying to do. This one missed the mark in this case, but they're not going to stop. Has anyone watched a Subaru commercial lately? It's fucking, you know, African children being adopted, going to a soccer game, everyone having a meal, laughing, and then at the end it says Subaru. That's it. That's all the fuck
Wait,
it is.
Oh, really?
So these companies don't care about you. Relax.
Here's the thing, though. There's something to be said for the yes, and there's something to be said for the company not undermining the rational roots of the civilization that allow it to continue printing money.
Maybe, but my point is simply that these companies are, and especially advertising. Advertising for products is basically just a snapshot of where we are. They're not going to try to move mountains. They're not going to try to be counterculture because they lose money that way. All they're trying to do is sell another Pepsi. Right, it's the Don Draper principle.
There are plenty of perfectly rational things about this culture that you can continue to appeal to, you know, like having the dog and the children in the back of the car. I think the Subaru commercials are great. I don't think there was any kind of SJW bullcrap in any Subaru commercial I've seen. I don't. Was that an actual commercial where they're adopting African children and throwing them in the back?
I don't mean to say that like what Subaru is doing is SJW. What I mean is that it's purely a reflection of the culture. And in that case, it's reflecting basically just the we need to feel good and be mushy feely culture. It's a car company, like.
Yeah, but the car. I totally agree. But reflect parts of the culture that aren't going to undermine rationality and, you know, the civilization as a total.
I mean, look here. It's the Don Draper principle. Is what it is. It's the goal of advertisement is you feeling something. And you have to look at what Pepsi was trying to achieve. This is a youth-based ad. They were trying to appeal to the youth. They wanted to be hipper and cooler than Coke, right? Because the only alternative you have is, you know, Coke's the old kind of classic brand. They're not hip anymore. We're the hip people that you want to go with. So if you're portraying the youth nowadays, and everything's second-handed, and everything's social media, and everything's virtue signaling. How do you not do this advertisement? What's your alternative? The kids who are not having as much sex anymore because they're deciding they want to respect themselves? The kids who aren't drinking as much anymore? The kids who aren't doing drugs anymore? That's the real counterculture that we've seen and we've tracked since, you know, Milo and the Sexodus, when he wrote about that. There is that counterculture out there. But that you can't sell that to the youth because, one, it's not loud. It's not in your face, right? Virtue signaling is necessarily loud and in your face. Social media is necessarily loud and in your face. And it's also not sexy to kids, even though there are people doing that and there are a large amount of people doing that. They've never marketed that kind of stuff because it's not sexy. It doesn't hook you. I'm not agreeing with the ad and saying it's a good ad, but I'm saying for what they were trying to do, it was good.
Here's what I would like to see in response from Coca-Cola is an ad where basically it starts with Kendall Jenner walking up and handing the police officer a Pepsi, but as he hands it to her, he pulls out his baton, just beats her relentlessly with the baton until she's a bloody pulp on the ground, and then he stands up and pulls from his pants. Cracks open a red can and says, "I'm a Coca-Cola man." And then it just cuts. Like, that's what I would like to see as a response ad. I mean, I don't know if Coke is hiring right now for marketing people, but I'm just saying. I'd produce the shit out of that.
I had the same thought. How bad is it that I knew you were going to say that? Just hits her in the face. He takes the can and then hits her in the face with it like a pro wrestling bit.
It's even better. Breaks her jaw with the Pepsi. Even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out the Coke like it's actually the cop should be Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then after he hits her with the Pepsi, he pulls out two Coke cans and just dumps it all over his face like he's drinking it like he used to do with beer.
That's right.
Yeah, he pulls up his visor and it's Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, I think we have a legit commercial here, fellas. Let's get this rolling.
Or parody. Yeah, hey, people, send us money so we can hire Stone Cold to make this parody.
That's right.
You know who else I wanted to punch in the face after they tried to impress me? The new Power Rangers. Mm. Find out why in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Focused on. All right, guys. So I did it.
Finally.
I saw the new Power Rangers movie.
Oh, I thought you meant sex.
Yeah, that took a while. I did do that later than normal, but let's not go into that right now, okay? That is not the topic of this podcast. This the topic of this what? Podcast is getting fucked by the Power Rangers movie. Even though Daniel sent me the article about GQ that says how Power Rangers sneakily became the first progressive superhero movie, I saw this because I wanted to see what they did with one of the properties that was iconic when I was a teenager. And you guys can ask me questions in a second, but I actually want to say that the problem with this wasn't necessarily the diversity. And we'll talk about the diversity, and we'll get to that, especially at the end of this segment. We're going to talk about Marvel and its diversity problem. But they did have the diverse cast, where they had the white guy in the lead playing Jason, and they had the autistic kid, the autistic black kid playing Billy, and he was basically just a nice version of Sheldon. Then they had the white girl playing Kimberly. Then they had the Hispanic girl playing Trini, which don't even get me started. Her name's Trini Kwan. They never once, they mentioned everybody's last name except Trini because they were like, well, the Asian guy's black, or the Asian guy, sorry. Yeah, the Asian guy's the Black Ranger and he plays Zach. So we can't have also an Asian playing Trini because that would be too many Asians and we need diversity. So they did definitely try to have the diversity in there. But remember, the original Power Rangers had their diversity group. And they did play this up a little bit, that these people are outcasts and they're outcasts of society. But they also played up the reason they were outcasts was Jason made a mistake. Kimberly made a mistake where some girl was going for the guy she was interested in. And there were naked pictures of that girl. So she sent that around. So she's not a victim by any means. Yeah, the people are really upset about this revenge porn storyline. It's very bizarre. But
What?
She did revenge porn, so she didn't want the girl to get the guy she was interested in, so she sent naked pictures of that girl around to everyone, and she got kicked off the gymnastics team and everything.
I thought she was
so
a lesbian in this movie.
No, the Yellow Ranger isn't a lesbian. Oh. Where the reason her parents don't like her is they're a strict Hispanic family, Reed Catholic, and they're the typical normal, successful family, and she can't find herself... find the ability to tell them who she really is, where they play up a whole Kate and Sawyer dynamic between the Black and Yellow Ranger, where Zach keeps telling her, oh, hey, crazy girl. And they have this like sort of flirtation. But then in the scene where they're all around the campfire, which is similar to the carte blanche scene in Lost, I'm being a super Lost nerd right now, between Kate and Sawyer, and they're all admitting their deep, dark secrets to each other. She's like, you know, I can't tell my parents how I really am. And he's like, oh, boyfriend trouble? And she looks at him and he goes, girlfriend trouble? And she never quite responds, and you're just left to assume that she's gay. But she could be bi, she could be omni, she could be sapio. We don't know what sexual
she is.
Could
be two-spirited, it's never pansexual.
Yeah, we don't know.
Robosexual. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. She could be any of these things because it's never shown in any meaningful way. She's never in a relationship. She does sort of flirt with Kimberly a little bit. But it's not really like flirting. It's like they're playing around with like arguing over who's going to get the last donut at Krispy Kreme. So
I'm already relentlessly bored.
Right. But there's actually something that I have to say about this movie, which is much worse than the diversity element. And it's the philosophy that the diversity necessarily leads to is the philosophy behind this movie. And you talk about being bored, Daniel. Most of this movie is boring because they don't really fight hand to hand, and the Zords are really only at the end. The majority of this movie is them becoming worthy to be Power Rangers. And the way they can become worthy to be Power Rangers is being willing to die for one another. That's literally when they can morph. They can't morph until they're like, yeah, this is it, and we're willing to give our lives for each other. Likewise, at the end, the Megazord does not get made until there's a giant pit where at the bottom of the pit is the Zeo Crystal. And Rita's trying to get Goldar to pull out the Zeo Crystal. And they're all in front of the pit with their Zords. And Jason's saying, hold the line, hold the line. But it's clear they're not going to be able to hold the line. And Goldar is ready to push them all in. And they're all getting pushed into the pit. And as they're all getting pushed into the pit, each of them's like, I'm proud to have fought next to you, and I'm willing to die. And if this is how we die, this is how we die, because we're going to protect Angel Grove. Which, by the way, they all hate fucking Angel Grove, and they make a point of saying they hate it, but they're not going to let it die anyway. So this is literally the inverse of Superman and Batman versus Superman saying, this is my world, you are my world. Where Zack Snyder shows what it means to actually, quote unquote, sacrifice your life. That it's not really a sacrifice, that it's noble because you're willing to do anything to fight for your values. This is the complete inverse. We're such fuck-ups, we're such outcasts, we hate this town so much that the only way to redeem us is to completely go the opposite extreme and just say we have no value to the point that our only value is valuing other people. This is the backwards-ass emotional induction that comes from this diversity and social justice nonsense. It comes from a lack of self-esteem and ending up hating yourself so much. Whereas the original Power Rangers had some appeal to it because these were teenagers with attitude that came from the Ninja Turtles, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, teenage. And they all had a strength to them. Kimberly was a gymnast. Jason was a football player. Whereas in this movie, he gives up on the football team and blows out his knee. And, you know, Billy was a genius and Zach was like a hip hop guy. And they completely inverted that to do this backwards ass induction towards selflessness and secondhandedness. And the movie actually portrays this. So it's sort of interesting if you want to look at it from the philosophical standpoint. And they didn't, you know, execute things poorly as far as production wise. It's just that the philosophy behind this is literally the 180 degree opposite of Batman versus Superman and Superman's death. This is what happens when you end up with the Marvel model. This is the logical conclusion of the Marvel model. We saw Doctor Strange in the fall that did the same thing. Well, they've now taken that and they've applied it to the team. This is no different from Civil War. This is no different from Doctor Strange. This is the latest version.
Yeah, but
are there any questions?
The most important question is how was Bryan Cranston as Zordon?
I mean, he was good, but he's Bryan
Cranston. Wait, he was Zordon again?
What was that, James? I didn't hear you.
Wait, they made him Zordon again?
What do you mean again?
Wasn't he Zordon in the original one?
No, he voiced some monsters in the original ones, but nerd fact, Billy Cranston was named after Bryan Cranston, and they make a point early in the movie of like being like, Billy Cranston, your name's Cranston, and because he's autistic, he has this whole like speech he gives about Cranston. So they really hung a lantern on the fact that, hey, isn't it cool? We named our character after Bryan Cranston, and now he's in this movie.
Wow.
That's nerdy.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was an unusual pick for Zordon, but.
Yeah, they were just going, I mean, like I said, it's the Marvel model, right? People said Bryan Cranston should have been Lex Luthor in Batman versus Superman. So they were just doing all of this to appeal to the masses because they were just seeing what the general culture was. This is just a movie that's trying to become popular off of what's popular at the time. That's all it is. It's all, I mean, if you want to talk about what the movie is, it's Breakfast Club meets Chronicle meets Transformers. I mean, there's just so, it's just a cliche and it's everything's hacked together.
You mean,
but you know, Bryan Cranston's trying to do what he's doing. And I feel so bad for Elizabeth Banks because she keeps trying to break out of like her comedic role and do things like Effie in The Hunger Games and Rita in this. And she gives everything she can, but the material she's given is just crap.
What you mean to say is this is a movie that's trying to be liked by giving up its own identity?
Oh, 100%. You could argue it's virtue signaling the movie. Although, Daniel, there was one joke that I laughed hysterically at because I knew you would love it. And everyone in the theater is like, why is he laughing? It's actually quite a brilliant joke.
Oh. Mm.
So Billy drags Jason up to this mountain to investigate. And Jason doesn't want to be there. And it's very obvious that Billy is autistic at this point. So Billy like finally opens up to him and he goes, so, Jason, I just have to tell you something. I'm on the spectrum. And Jason replies to him, is that some sort of fitness routine? And I was like, I'm laughing so hard because I was like, that's definitely a Daniel joke. It was very funny.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll take credit, even though I had nothing to do with it.
So, yeah, I mean.
Tackle.
It's Power Rangers. Like, yeah, I mean, clearly it's a bad movie. But, you know, the Yellow Ranger is hot and it pisses me off because they had the whole I mean, they had the Jack and Sawyer dynamic between Jason and Zach, and they had the Kate and Sawyer dynamic
Jason
between
and
the Yellow
Zach.
Ranger and the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Sorry. I spaced out for about 4 seconds. And then
they had the Kate and Sawyer dynamic between Trini and Zach, so there was a lot, like I said, they're just appropriating everything, and it's just disappointing. Yeah, it's just, you know, there's just so much. Yeah, I've said what I have to say.
Did they keep the original tune? Go, go, Power Rangers. You're mighty.
You
want to
talk about that?
Power Rangers.
So this is what I mean, where it's all cliche and hacked together. When they get their Zords and the Zords first start going down the street from Angel Grove, which, by the way, if you want to see why Zack Snyder's a good director, watch the fight scene down the main street of Angel Grove versus the fight scene down the main street of Smallville, and you'll see the fucking difference. Like, but the Zords start going down, and they play that song for about 15 seconds and then cut out of it. So it was like they completely just forced it in there to make the fans happy. It had no place in it. It didn't fit the tone or theme of the movie at all.
Was Alpha sassy and ambiguously gay?
They tried to make him that way, but it didn't come across that way at all. Like, just, I wouldn't have done Alpha that way at all. Especially when you have Bill Hader, who one of his famous characters from SNL is that sassy gay character from Weekend Update.
I can't imagine.
That's one of his best characters.
Okay, where's the White and Green Rangers? Are they in this?
They of course the mid scene credit was the Green Ranger.
Yeah.
So they didn't show the Green Ranger, but there was a desk, and they did a Ferris Bueller thing where the detention teacher was going Tommy Oliver, and they show a desk with a green jacket. But here's the thing. This is the final note I think we need to say on this. Do you know what the stars of this movie have said?
What
gender they want the Green Ranger to
Trans?
Be?
Trans.
Oh, well, that one, actually, you've somehow made it work. But no, they want the Green Ranger to be a woman, because then it will be 3-3 on the team, because right now it's 3-2.
Great.
Everyone knows it's got to be equal, or else it's not a good movie. In Civil War, they should have had, you know, 3 different Black Widows just to balance shit out.
How can it be called Black Widow when she's not even black? How offensive is that?
That's
is the
true.
Green Ranger in this movie going to be like a fucking Al Gore disciple?
I mean, they could make him an environmentalist, but they do say he's going to have
the most
attitude out of any of them, because it's supposed to be teenagers with attitude. I read that interview after from the director, and I go, did you forget that in the movie? Because the only one who has attitude is Zach. I mean, being autistic, you necessarily don't have attitude. Because you don't understand attitude. If it's teenager's attitude, why do you make the kid autistic?
Oh my god. So stupid.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Let's move on, please.
You want to move on? Yeah, to other stupid stuff?
Yes.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Anne is a Netflix original series based upon Anne of Green Gables. A lot of this picture looked very washed out to me, and it seems like they're trying to capitalize on this whole, you know, we need female protagonist things. And they, in a way, and I don't mean this in a sexual way, I mean this metaphorically, they tried to make Anne of Green Gables sexier, it seemed like. Like, there was more going on to this than there actually is.
Yeah. All I could think of was, like, my entire reaction to this trailer was just, why? Were there people clamoring for Anne of Green Gables television shows? Is there an online petition to have Anne of Green Gables turn into a Netflix series? Why? Tackle.
Tackle.
James?
I'm not exactly the target audience for this. just tackle, I guess.
Tackle.
All right, I'm tackling as well.
Tackle.
Midsiders out there, take a look at that trailer and let us know what you think. Maybe
I mean,
you
I'm not against
audience.
It.
So it's none of us are going to watch Egg then?
Egg her?
Thank you. I'm not even going to explain that. Look it up.
Second trailer.
Girl Boss is another Netflix original series. This is about, and I'm going to say this because I really don't know what this is about. I don't know what the conflict of this series is. A girl who sells things on eBay, and then her eBay account gets canceled, so she makes her own website to sell things, and people are very mad at her for flipping clothes. That seems to be what this trailer is about.
That is a better summary than the trailer gives, certainly.
No, that's what I got from it. She's like, you know how some people flip houses? And I'm like, yeah, I guess people watch HGTV. I flip clothes. And then, like, people get mad at her throughout the trailer.
Like, Inside Out.
And then it shows her making $600 after that. Like, whoa, some people flip houses, but I make $600.
Screw you, Dean, from Community. I just ripped you off.
It was such a letdown.
That's the other thing, too. Like, if you're going to show her being a dick to somebody, why do you cast the Dean from Community? Like, that does nothing. Like, in basic pro wrestling terms, if you want to give somebody a good rub, you don't have them beat the shit out of an easy opponent. Like, that does not make her look good. It makes her look like she's picking on the mentally challenged.
Yeah. And then she gets up into his face at the end, and she says, like, I'm serious. Or I forget what she says, but it's like, it's just, I don't get what's going on.
I was confused if I was supposed to identify with the main character, or if she was an anti-hero. Like, I didn't know exactly how I was supposed to react, other than bored and confused and annoyed and a little bit hungry. And
well, that's the thing. We should like her, right? This is it seems to be a show about an entrepreneur. So we should be like, yeah, good job. But like, they did nothing. Like, we should be the target audience, and they're doing nothing to inspire us.
But the conflict was, best I could discern, she fucked up on eBay by not shipping a jacket that she was supposed to sell because she fell in love with it. And then eBay was like, screw you, bitch. Like, what?
The conflict is she went to emo night instead of shipping the jacket.
So the question of egg was why? And the question about this trailer is what?
I'm sensing a theme here. So I'm tackling.
Tackle.
Apparently, we all hate women. That's what I'm getting out of this so far.
Yeah, it's the hatred
of
women.
No,
because
we want to see the Wonder Woman movie. Oh, take that true. Back.
That's right.
When is that coming out already? I want to go to the theater again.
Wonder Woman is coming out early June. First, we have to withstand all the pro Guardians of the Galaxy stuff in May. Because they're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy, then they're going to have the ride launch at Disneyland. So there's going to be a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy hype. Then we can get to Wonder Woman.
Okay.
But let's do one more.
Final trailer.
Phoenix Forgotten is a thriller horror? I can't really tell the genre. It's a found footage movie about a UFO sighting in Phoenix, and three college students went to investigate it and they disappeared. So it's found footage where you know, it's a movie where you know they're going to disappear at the end, so you make it found footage. So you already know the ending of this movie. The camera's going to drop and they're just going to disappear.
Okay.
Like, stop making found footage movies! Stop it!
Or at least
it's like the
stop
worst
making
possible
the
use
same
of the genre.
One.
Yeah.
They apparently can only
There's
make one
There's been one good
them.
Found footage. Right.
Yeah.
What's the one good found footage movie, Daniel?
Cloverfield.
Yes, because
no.
They did something different with it. They were right. Like, hey, what if we did a monster movie that was found footage? Fucking brilliant. Thank you. And you put TJ Miller behind the camera commenting on everything? Great.
Yeah.
I hated that guy. HUD. Fuck HUD. I was glad he died.
Funny, watching this trailer, I thought to myself, oh, an interesting, cool documentary about UFOs that is gonna like get to the bottom of what actually happened in Arizona. And then it devolved into, oh no, this is the Blair Witch Project. Oh no, this is every shitty found footage movie. I'd rather have a documentary. But not like the documentaries that appear on TLC, the ones that are like, did aliens build the pyramid? But like, because the answer's no. But like an actual documentary that like looks at declassified military things and looks at, you know, airplane patterns and whatever, and shows us definitively there's no such fucking thing as UFOs. But no, instead I got a shitty version of a shitty genre. So fucking tackle bullshit nonsense crap.
Tackle. I'm tackling as well, but I have a question for you, Justin, for after you tackle, which is found footage.
Would it be presumptuous? Yeah, I'm tackling.
Tackle. Is found footage naturalism? Because it feels like it's just, oh, well, that's how something gets shot in real life, is that someone points a camera at it, so that's how we should communicate that to the audience.
I don't think it's inherently naturalism, but I think you've backed your way into the critique of the found footage technique. And this is most apparent in M. Night's found footage movie, The Village, where M. Night is 100% a romanticist. That movie is 100% romanticism. But the limits of the found footage genre are that the director cannot control the camera. The camera is controlled by the characters, and thus it's controlled by the writer. So you are necessarily limiting the director when you're doing that, and you're necessarily limiting the potential to be romantic with the visuals. So that's 100% what's wrong with the found footage genre.
Point of order.
The challenge.
The challenge. Oh, The Village is a found footage movie?
Oh, sorry. I meant The Visit. The VI. Oh, I apologize.
I was so confused.
Sorry. That's a great question, Daniel. I got confused in my head because VI, and my brain just went there because that's my favorite M. Night movie.
Yeah, all I could think of possibly was how high was I when I saw that film that I didn't realize it was found footage.
No, I was referring to The Visit, where it's filmed from the point of view of the two young children visiting their grandparents.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that a 9 for tackle this week?
Yeah, all three of us tackled all of them. So we had to have that. We've had a couple good weeks here where, Daniel, you actually hugged everything.
Yeah.
So there was bound to be some tackling.
Yeah.
We're also in a lull right now where all of these summer blockbusters are being advertised. So we're in that lull where all the trailers for the good stuff has been released and the big stuff has been released. So there's not much going on right now.
Yeah, it's all crap.
Well, let's talk about more crap, and some big stuff happened this week in regards to Marvel that I want to talk to you about, and it's regard to this diversity issue, which we've seen come up on this episode a lot already. And it's one of the VPs of the comics said that the reason their sales are going down is the diversity that's being pushed in it. You know, we've seen this in the movies, and a recent example of the diversity in the comics is they're doing a limited series. I don't know if it's limited, actually. They're doing a series of a gay Hispanic woman called Miss America. And she, like, studies at, like, the Sotomayor Library or something. And this is what they're pushing, and they think is going to sell. And the VP said that diversity is in their characters is killing their sales. Do you agree with him? And is this an example of everything we've been saying with the Pepsi ad, with the Power Rangers movie, with the admittance entry or the admittance application essay for the Stanford student? It's just virtue signaling, isn't it? Virtue signaling by a company?
It's sort of Pepsi-esque in the sense that you're trying to sell to a specific audience using a specific method, in this case, social justice issues. But even worse than Pepsi, I think that Marvel has misunderstood who its actual audience is, who the actual comic book buying audience is. I don't think it's these wildly progressive people who are into social justice and whatever. That may be a certain percent, but it's not the overwhelming percent. The overwhelming percent, I think, are people who want to see just new stories about these characters that they've come to fall in love with. These characters who their parents raised them on and who there's some history behind. These people who are buying
comics. In
that
same sense.
Yeah.
In that same sense, did you just draw unintentionally an equivalency between this and Gamergate?
I think I did, yes. You can certainly elaborate on the point that
audience?
I made brilliantly.
Well, I'm not elaborating. I'm gonna give you concretes. All I'm saying is this is the same thing people said about the Gamergate audience. That they, you know, they were all just angry white males. When those are the people they're denigrating the audience that's buying it and thinking you need to shove diversity down. And that's why the Gamergate went the way it was, correct?
Indeed. And I don't think anyone in this audience or in tech journalism or whatever it is anti-diversity, but it's more pro-greatness. And what I mean there is we like Iron Man as Tony Stark being a dick white guy billionaire. Like, that was a perfectly great thing because it was a great character. You want to introduce new characters and make the and try to build up fan bases around them. I don't think people will be inherently, anti any of that. And in fact, if you can create a new character and then have them like integrate a little bit into the Tony Stark Marvel universe and get more people interested in that character, that's the way you build a character. But you don't take the established great icons of your brand and invert them or completely change them for the sake of diversity. No one takes Coca-Cola and makes 98 versions of Coca-Cola because we need diverse taste profiles. Like, it's Coca-Cola.
Well, we saw what happened when they tried to make New Coke.
Right. Bill Cosby advertised it. It raped a bunch of people, and then it was taken off the market. Like, that's what happened with New Coke, and that's what's happening with New Iron Man. Or new Thor, or whatever it is. People don't want that shit. Make new characters. Build new fan bases. But don't fuck with the great stuff.
And did you see the results some of this has had? There was a story that just broke, and I sent it to you guys in the thread today. It just broke at the end of the week that there was an Indonesian artist who put references to verses in the Quran and anti-Semitic language into his panels. And they were X-Men panels. So, like, it says jewelry next to Kitty Pryde's head, and she's a Jew.
Oh, boy.
And, like, X-Men is the one that's about diversity, right?
Yes.
X-Men is the one that's about inclusion. And then you put these Quran references to Quran verses that are like, you know, fuck these people, kill them all. Like,
great. I mean, it's bound to happen. And fine, if the Marvel artists want to go this direction, they'll go down with a sinking ship and they can have their virtue signaling until the day they have no job. But then the characters will have to be sold and hopefully someone will make comics with the characters people once loved and still do love.
So Daniel, when you're talking about greatness and people wanting to see that and not wanting to, you know, they're not messaging their market, they're not hitting their market. This is something we've seen throughout Hollywood and throughout entertainment where people are, we're having this diversity forced down our throats, right? We're being told this is what we want to see in a story and we don't. And for me personally, this is manifested in an interesting way. I have found myself going back to professional wrestling. Why? Because there are good guys and there are bad guys and they have their gimmicks and that's it. When there's a guy who comes out to a song that says glorious, and he just talks about how glorious he is, and these people just enjoy being good at what they're good at, and it's just good versus evil, and they're fighting each other, I'd much rather watch that than all of this crap that I'm being force-fed.
You mean it doesn't get into the nuances of why Undertaker was abused as a child, and he really didn't want to be the Undertaker, he wanted to be a doctor who helped give birth to people, but he was put in a kennel and forced to perform horrible, horrible, unspeakable acts on a gopher. And thus he became the Undertaker.
No. It's interesting you say that, because they just ended the Undertaker's career. He just retired.
Oh.
And the way he retired was, he had a match at the main event of WrestleMania, he lost, the other guy beat him and said, this is my yard now, and that was the end of it. The Undertaker went to the center of the ring, took off his hat and coat, put it in the middle of the ring, and walked off. That's it.
Now he's
he
running
lost,
for
the other guy
mayor
won.
Of Provo, Utah.
No, no, that's the Undertaker's brother, Kane, right? He's a libertarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew
that's the Undertaker's brother, Kane. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so no, you're exactly right. 100% correct. That's what that's the culmination of that guy's career. One of the most iconic characters and performers. They didn't do something fucked up with him. He got beat. You know, now WrestleMania is the other guy's yard. That's it. End of story. And I'd much rather watch that. It's simple. It's stupid. There's a lot of times I'm bored by it, but I'd much rather be bored at times with moments of flashes of greatness than I would watch this diversity crap.
To me, pro wrestling is like the entertainment version of something Ayn Rand called Tiddlywinks music, which is like, it's not going to be Beethoven's Ninth, but it's also not shit. And I'm okay with listening to something that's consistently not shit.
Right. And that's the question I'm asking. Are we getting to the point now that most of our entertainment is not, or most of our entertainment is shit, that people like me actually have to resort to not shit?
To continue
for
the
me,
music,
a lot of...
Sorry, James. I'm going to make one quick point and then you can jump in. To me, the scary thing, to continue using the music metaphor, is that we are moving in the direction of film and TV in the same way that music did. And when we get to the point where we are in film and TV that we are in music, which is the worst bastardized, produced, poppy, auto-tuned fucking nonsense shoved down our throats as music, when we get to that point in film and TV, people are going to check out in its entirety. I don't think they'll put up with it in the visual arts like they do in the audio arts.
Right, because modern music is made to be as inoffensive as possible.
Yes.
James?
What I find that I've been doing with this sort of stuff is I'll watch the crap, but I'll try to look through it. I'll try to just enjoy the part that is good and is still there. And I feel like I was able to do this with Doctor Strange, despite the altruist themes. I kind of just focused on the parts that I liked. And I'd compare it to, you know, Kira and Leo watching Western films that just had like all the communism kind of in it. And they completely made a hash out of just communist bullcrap hash out of the films that did come to them from the West, but they were able to kind of read between the lines and figure out what the real plot of the movie was. And so they still got something out of it. And you know, I'm not saying it's quite at that level yet, but
that's what I find myself here, doing. James, is that you and others can continue to do that with Tillman Phoebe. Wow. Film and TV until we get to the point where music is all, or TV is all like modern music, you know. If I had a penny that fell from above every time I fell in love, what the fuck are you doing right now? Then you're not going to be able to do it.
And
anymore.
I mean, Doctor Strange is so close to that.
I don't think so. Come on. What would that even look like in the visual arts? Like just puppies running around and then... And then I hear that's what Japan is, by the way. It's just like all you see on TV is just, okay, here's 70 hours of kittens.
Tell me what the difference is between putting a movie and putting Mads Mikkelsen and putting Benedict Cumberbatch in it and making it look good, and a song with a huge hook that's really catchy and has someone like Little John who's super charismatic delivering it. What's the difference? Little John is a very intelligent, charismatic person, and he's figured out how to game the system by making this crap. What's the difference between Doctor Strange and that? Tell me. There's very little difference.
Push back a tiny bit. There is some Doctor amount Strange more has... story. It's a bad story, but there's some amount more story. I'm saying that, yes, I agree with you, Justin, it's in that direction, but it's not there yet. I mean, I think...
Yeah, I'm being over the
top. I think movies like Black Swan are closer to being like modern nonsense music than yeah.
Anyway. Well, Power Rangers is closer to being it than Doctor Strange was.
Certainly. Basically, it's a movie that just has to check all the boxes of being, you know, progressive, quote unquote, and not offensive and inclusive and woke, etc. Then you'll have the movie.
Well, version. And if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes review of it, it got 46%. And when I hear, you know, and someone tells me, I said I'm going to see it, and she said, "Oh, I heard that's all right." That's what pop music is, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. So I think, you know, starting with Power Rangers and talking about this, I think it's a great way to sort of bring it full circle there. So, James, I'm being a little not generous to Doctor Strange just because it pissed me off to take the doc, because House is my favorite show ever. So to take that character and turn him into a self-sacrificial character, especially with such good actors behind the movie, pisses me off. So I'm very not generous to that movie.
Right. I noticed.
But I'm going to close out this segment. I'm going to issue a challenge to you guys and to any midsiders out there. And Daniel, you may have already done this. I don't know if you actually watched any of the videos I sent you. But I want you to go on YouTube and I want you to type in NXT, the letters, NXT Takeover, Bobby Roode, R-O-O-D-E, entrance. And I want you to watch that and I want you to tell me that's not better than most of the crap we're being force-fed right now.
All
right, I'm going to take that as Daniel has not watched it yet. So we'll reconvene next week at the top of the show, and I'll ask them if they watched it. And Midsiders, let us know if you Googled that or you put that into YouTube and you watched it. But for now, we're going to talk about other crap on the internet. It's time to round out the episode in Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First, Reddit. Reddit, who's your favorite minor character? And what I want to ask you guys is, what's considered a minor character? Because to me, like, I could answer this character Sawyer, I could answer it Francisco and Atlas Shrugged, but then is more Eddie a minor character than Francisco? Where's the line here?
I think there are basically three categories of characters for me. There's actor, actress, that's one, just being politically correct. Then supporting actor, actress, that's two. And then below that, you have minor character. So I would think that, for instance, Dagny, actress, Francisco, supporting actor, and then Eddie is borderline, but I would probably put Eddie as a minor character. Does that make sense? Anyone disagree with that?
Yeah, it makes sense. So then I would have to say it's someone like Eddie, because just the meaning he has in the story and the part he has, it just works so well, and that he's so, even though he's a minor character, he's so integral to it. Same thing with Cheryl Brooks, right? She's such a great minor character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some that I like a lot. There are some that are so minor that I shouldn't like them as much as I do. Like Boba Fett in Star Wars, who has half a line, basically. And he's in like 41 seconds of film. And it's like, he's still such a badass.
No disintegration.
Scruffy, the janitor in Futurama. I laugh every fucking time he comes on screen. He's a hysterical character. What is the name? Oh, the Shitty Walk guy in South Park.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Hello, welcome Shitty Walk. Would you like to try Shitty Chicken?
Yeah.
Yes.
Destroy my shitty wall.
Yeah. Goddamn Mongolians. Love that character. So I think there are a lot of small-time characters that I like a lot that just add, and it's especially shows that have depth of universe that have these kind of characters, like South Park, Futurama, Lost, The Simpsons is obviously one of them. Like Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons is a really cool character. Anyway.
Yeah, when we're talking about TV and film, I think for me it would have to be from Star Trek Enterprise. And this could be seen as social justice-y in today's day and age. But the guy who flew the ship on Enterprise was Travis Mayweather. And they like never even had an episode about him, or he didn't have much screen time. And I was like, in undergrad, we need the more Mayweather movement. Just because it was alliterative, because alliteration is awesome, and because he was such a cool character. Like, he was just a likable guy, and you just wanted to know more about him. I liked Harry Kim in Voyager 2. But that's what I'm saying, the line is thin, right? Are they supporting or minor? But
yeah, it's pretty thin. James?
Right, he's part of the bridge crew. I'm going to go a different direction on this, since since you've already covered a lot of the things I was going to say, is one of my favorite minor characters, I don't know if you'd call him a character, is the most interesting man in the world. I find that little bit, like, so, well, interesting. I just want to know more about him. Whenever I hear, and they show all this footage of him, like, you know, like, diving for, you know, jewels or something, like, or, you know, having a, you know, a beautiful beard as a young man and all this stuff. So I actually looked him up online, and Dos Equis actually has all this, like, stuff online telling you about all of his adventures, and this actually highlights something about minor characters. A lot of times, they're minor characters for a reason. You just can't go that far with some of them. And so the most interesting man in the world was actually ruined for me when I actually got too into him. So.
Is this the old one or the new one?
There's a old. Wait, what?
Yeah, they recast him. He used to be that, like, older guy who was, you know, just.
Oh, I'm talking,
like,
about the older one. There's a new one now?
There is, yeah.
Yeah, you've never seen, like, the tall guy?
No, I'm talking about the old Spanish man.
The new one is
there's a new one.
Mexican Adrian Brody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds terrible. I'm all about the old Spanish guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
well, to
I have to point out that there are numerous characters in Bob's Burgers that are awesome, but Mr. Fish Odor is fucking hysterical. Just hysterical.
And I just wanted to close out by saying another show that had a great, well, a couple shows, actually. I just thought of another one. Actually, I thought of two more. Wow. Okay. Suddenly my brain's going crazy. So three shows that had a lot of great minor characters. And actually, I have a minor character story with you, Daniel.
Oh, my God.
If you might remember this. So first of all, Community has a lot of great minor characters. Yep. Scrubs had a lot of great minor characters. Remember when they had, like, Starsky and Hutch?
I hated Scrub.
They kept asking Hutch where Starsky was or whatever that was. And then made by the same people as Cougar Town had a lot of great minor characters. And do you remember, Daniel, and I won't say where because I don't think I'm supposed to, but you brought me to a place and I was like, oh my God, that's the actress who played Barb on Cougar Town.
I remember that, but I don't remember where we were. You can tell me off the air.
Yeah. Okay. Last Reddit. Your mother is now the new president of the United States. What changes can we expect? Well, if it's Daniel's mother, people are going to get upset that all she does is share the things Daniel does on Facebook.
That's right. National news every time I post something on Facebook.
Every time I post something on Facebook.
Every time any of my friends post anything on Facebook, my mother will share it with the world. So. Additionally, you have to look forward to a new torture and capital punishment program for anyone who is even remotely mean to an animal. My mother would as soon dump half the planet into a bottomless pit than allow one squirrel to feel bad. She is an animal lover if there ever was one, so certainly if you kicked your dog, that would be a month of torture plus death. If you killed an animal, Lord have mercy on your soul. That would be the end.
Michael Vick.
Yeah.
Criminal number one.
Are you fucking kidding me? I don't think there has ever been a conversation during football season that has not ended with my mother ranting about Michael Vick and why he's not still in prison. She thinks it's unconscionable that any team would allow him to play for them after he did that. So,
But what's her opinions on Ray Rice?
Oh, fine. Nothing. You know, everyone makes mistakes. Justin, what would it be like if your mom was president?
I don't feel like we could predict that. Like, I feel like whatever she was influenced by my brother was what would happen, is what I feel like.
Your brother plays the part of a Dick Cheney in this film?
Yes. No, my mom would try and make the greatest number of people happy, but if anyone got upset with one of the initiatives she did, she'd get really upset and call them ungrateful. There might be some similarities between her and Trump as president.
Oh, your dad as first man would be very interesting, though. I feel like that would be excellent TV fodder.
He would be the, if you're going to have a first man, he would be the ideal person to be a first man. Because he would make the rounds on all the talk shows and everything. Like, he would be the inverse of Joe Biden. Like, in a way, Joe Biden was kind of the first man, right?
Oh, yeah.
So my dad would be the inverse of Joe Biden as first man.
Oh,
funny. James?
I don't know. The White House garden would have succulents in it instead of like trees, actual trees. Like, I don't know, it'd be a bunch of weird desert plants.
That's a change I could get behind.
And then
I'd vote for that candidate.
And then, you know, everything would just be normal.
Great podcast.
Riveting. Riveting, James. I'm sure the podcast audience really appreciates the depth of thought.
I thought about this for a really long time. I don't know what my mom would do.
All right.
She'd be normal, I guess. She'd be just a normal president. Just a normal one.
That's probably good. That speaks to your childhood being okay. So, what did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that it's actually incredibly easy to get into Stanford, and maybe I should have tried to get into Stanford, especially with my bullshit essay that I submitted. Probably had a good shot at it. So. Yeah.
James?
Damn it, what did I learn? Justin? I forgot what I was going to learn. I'm sorry.
His participation in this podcast has slowly gone down on a, what's the slope? Rise over run? So the run is, I don't know. Shut up, Justin.
It's decreased logarithmically.
Yeah, I was trying to make a math joke, but didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I learned that I just couldn't. Justin, why did you have us watch these videos?
The movies? The trailers?
Yeah, just, I don't know. Oh, here's what I learned. I remembered. Is that that apparently pro wrestling is something I should, like, try, apparently? What's the draw on pro wrestling?
It's not as fake as reality.
Yeah, exactly. No, the draw of it, there was actually, if you're going to take it seriously what I said and you want to see, I will link to this.
Yeah.
This woman watched WrestleMania. She had never watched pro wrestling before, and she watched it, and she wrote a whole review of it on Bleacher Report. And she did something really interesting that the wrestling community really responded to, where she really got to the heart of what the appeal of it is, where she went in with an open mind and an open heart, and she just enjoyed it. And she really was able to, as someone who's new to it, really just enjoyed it. So if you want to see what it is, I can link to that article, Midsiders out there. I'll link to that article on the Facebook page, and you can check that out there.
You want to check out other things having to do with the Midside, go to themidside.com/podcast, and you can check out a complete archive of past shows, basically an endless number of hours of listening to the three of us and others speak about things. Can you imagine something greater than that? I can't, certainly. And then, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, where we do not accept fake reviews, hashtag, but we do accept real reviews. 5-star ones at that. Our numbers grow by the day. We are becoming one of the highest rated podcasts that I speak on a weekly basis. It's tremendous. And then, of course, you can go to all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all at the Midside. Justin is on there all the time, probably more than he should be, certainly more than his mental health allows. But nonetheless, send him a message, dick pic, whatever you want. And then, of course, there's patreon.com/themidside. Patreon. Oh, Patreon. There's a reverence about Patreon.
Yes.
Patreon.com allows you to subscribe to the show with actual dollars so that every time we produce a piece of content, you help us keep the lights on. Yes, indeed. helps us buy advertising or new equipment, helps our sound be better than it is. I think we've made some strides there in the past few months. So good on you, Patreon folks, for helping us do that. And then, of course, we're going to do Patreon-specific or Patreon-exclusive content, I should say. We did one on the Oscars, right? Did I remember we did do that? Yeah. And then we're going to be doing some over the summer about football. That'll be fun, and other things. I don't know. We're going to watch Lucy, maybe? Is that what we're going to do? Justin,
yeah, Midsider Alfred has already watched Lucy in preparation for us discussing it. So
excellent.
I think we're kind of pot committed at this point.
I think we're pot committed there, definitely. So, and then the most important thing you can do, though, seriously, if you got no money or no fingers to type reviews, that's fine. Tell
if you've got no
friend.
Fingers to type reviews, send me to your GoFundMe page and I will give you some money for prosthetics.
Use your nose to click subscribe and then tell a friend. Tell a friend. I tell friends all the time that I'm on a podcast and then I immediately tell them, but you probably shouldn't listen because you'll think less of me. But if you aren't on this podcast and you want to tell your friends about it, you should do that. Even if they're not like that great a friend, even if they're like the kind of friend that you made at the gym when you're awkwardly checking out another guy by accident because you were staring off into space, but then he came over and was oddly clingy with you afterwards, tell that guy.
Oh, that gives me a story, actually. So
weird.
There was this couple at the gym who he had on a Patriots thing and she had on like a Celtics thing one day. And I went over, of course, to talk to them, because if you're at the gym I go to and you're wearing a Patriots thing, I will talk to you. Well, the other day I was back at the gym and I'm lifting and I'm in the middle of, lifting like this heavy weight. And this girl comes over and puts a weight down. And when she does, she smiles at me. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm in the middle of a rep here. Leave me alone. And then I start walking across the gym and the guy's like, nice Edelman hat. Nobody knows a fucking JE11 hat. It turned out to be that guy. And then I looked at the girl. I go, oh, that's why you smiled at me. It's you guys.
It's
and then
you
I said
guys.
Hi to them. And, yeah, I said hi to them and apologized for forgetting them. But yeah, that's what Daniel's talking about. I should tell them about my podcast.
That's right. And then they invited you to have a three-way and everyone lived happily ever after. Yes. Well, you can have a three-way with us every week by clicking subscribe on iTunes. Love
Actually,
you.
It's a four-way because there's three of us.
Well, wah, wah.
Yes, and Justin.
Yes, and this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Menage a Ketra.